Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us, and enjoy the show.
Greenhorns, this is Severin, this is Greenhorns Radio, and it is May, it's still May, it's still beautiful, and even in Vermont, my God, it's already spring in Vermont, too. How you doing, Joe?
Good, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm on the tail end of 15 days on the road in Texas and Colorado and everywhere, but I'm on my way home, slowly. What have you been up to?
Oh, the same madness as ever. Today, I'm actually in Burlington finishing some deliveries, and so I'm taking this call by Perkins Pier, looking out on a sunlit Lake Champlain over at the Adirondacks. And so I'm very happy to call.
Hi. So let's do a little background for our folks. What does this mean, Bean Crafters? Do you make coffee or what is this?
Right, fair enough. Right, so we chose the word crafters very intentionally, derived from old word craftin, to make with skill and implicitly with care. And so we take beans, not of a coffee origination, but more of of Phaseolus vulgaris. We take edible dry beans that are grown in the region and turn them into value-added products, as well as just sell them as is, whether it's shelling beans or dry beans. Basically try to get people to interface with soil-building, plant-based proteins in as many different ways as possible, and in a way that's kind of as often as possible, unexpected, and ideally always joyful.
Well, I think you have surpassed your own modesty. Joe makes these amazingly badass bean cookies and bean burgers and bean crack that is all organic and all local and groovy everything, and also just is like amazing. Your bean stuff is amazing.
Yeah. I'm glad you dig them. Yeah, they're a lot of fun to make, and since you have the choice to make stuff that either tastes good or doesn't, it seems more sensible to make stuff that tastes good and is more enjoyable. And we tried, I chose this path through life because I couldn't, I had worked on a half dozen different farms and was gradually coming to the realization that I was not in a position, nor would I be anytime soon, to be able to afford to access land or the means with which to make that land productive. So value-added products were, for me, the lowest cost entry point to be an active participant in the food system. Later, we're just getting around to considering ourselves viable candidates for getting on some land sometime in the next 18 months, hopefully.
You're good at business, and beyond just cooking, it seems like a really solid tactic for other farmers to know about is what you are describing here, this tactic of building a business around value closer to the consuming end and with a very strong cash flow model, ins and outs. Let's talk about your business and how it's scaling and how that sets you up for the next phase.
Right. So I think hard to speak to this laconically, but I'll do my best. So there's
start from the beginning.
Yeah. Okay. So looking around, I realized there's a lot of things that either weren't getting made or weren't getting made in terms of products out on the marketplace, that either weren't getting made at all locally, or if they were available, weren't being made at a caliber that people were maybe hoping for or expecting. So we kind of were looking around and finding out where we could kind of dovetail in with some of those low-hanging fruit opportunities. And for us, a Blackbean burger, a veggie burger was kind of commonsensical, because all the ones out there throughout the course of the late 90s and early 2000s had anyone that was doing anything that was relatively meaningful at scale got bought up by Kraft and Kellogg's and ConAgra and stuff like that. So there was not much going on there. And what I also realized was that not a single restaurant nor any farm that had a kitchen was using their kitchen to capacity. So it seemed like a natural thing, like instead of trying to just like have all these little pockets of people trying to create something from scratch, to just kind of approach things a little bit more collaboratively. And so in that same breath, that's kind of the undercurrent philosophy that we try to do with every aspect of the business. Like no kitchen's being used to full capacity, no harvest even of any single crop is used to full capacity. So we place standing orders for all the seconds that certain farms can generate, and try to come up with efficient means of keeping those coming in each week and making sure that we're not overwhelmed, but at the same time that we take as much as possible and try to make it give a fair market price for those seconds, so that we're able to get a deal on local organic produce that's competitive with stuff that would be conventional through a generic distributor. And meanwhile, we're also able to help boost the per acreage economic yields of the growers that we work with. And then in that same breath, early on, the farm that I was working at, Boardman Hill Farm in West Rutland, gave us the opportunity to both grow some of what we wanted to on his land and use of a tractor and all this stuff, but as well as access to a kitchen that we were able to modify and make a viable commercial kitchen. And in that same breath, we tried to make that synergistic. And because we weren't much with cash, we did have more time than money. So I traded for my rent. I would set up his Friday farmer's market for him. So over the course of the month, that was saving him hundreds of dollars in labor. And we paid our propane bill and stuff like that. But we kind of just had an open conversation and talked about what we could do and find ways to work around what we couldn't do. And that kind of extended into my personal life, too, to where I realized I wasn't really on the fast track to a cash intensive livelihood. I wasn't on Wall Street, so I made sure that over the past few years that my lifestyle kind of honored the pragmatic restrictions that the path that I was on dictated. Basically, I wasn't going to make a lot of money, so I wanted to make sure that I could live a life where I didn't need to spend a lot of money and could really enjoy myself in the process. I also realized that I wasn't going to be able to spend as much time in the fields as I wanted to, so I made sure that I could, at least in the background in my home life, spend time learning from the soil, because I didn't want to forsake the years that I was growing the kitchen side of things and completely become disconnected from the soil. So I spent the last few years on different farms doing work trade for those farms for a place to stay. And as such, I've been able to only spend a couple thousand dollars over the course of years on rent, which translates directly to money that I was able to leave in Bean Crafters, so that from a cash flow perspective, we didn't need to take on any large amounts of debt to get to where we are now. So we were able to grow at a faster rate and with a better debt-to-income ratio than most other small enterprises that I've seen try to make it.
So far, so good.
So that was
opportunities,
that was
moves. What's next?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so we've been at this. We're in our fourth year, and we've doubled our gross each year, which more fun than thinking about doubling our gross is doubling the amount of pounds of food from the local soils that people have been eating. And so we're at a point now where I'm really psyched where when I stop and think about it, there's actually people that I never get to meet, literally hundreds of them sit down and eat stuff that we've played a hand in bringing together, and that feels really good. And so looking forward, I'm trying to find ways to kind of take our proof of concept, which I feel like we're just kind of getting to that proof of concept point. We're like, right, this works. People like what we do. It's economically viable what we do, so how can we do it consistently? How can we do it increasingly better? And how can we do things that are more of the same? So
we were just talking about what's next, and I wanted to make sure to remind you about your guidance, to give your guidance to those who are thinking in terms of pickle sauce and hot sauce, jam and jelly and ginger snap cookies, to consider the school system and institutional buyers, and maybe reflect a little bit on how that has been a part of your growth strategy and your approach to those kinds of buyers. And of course, it helps that you're in Vermont, where everything comes up roads all the time. But go for that, maybe for a little while.
Okay, that was a little touchy, but I think I understood you. You want me to speak to a little bit about the focus on schools and institutional buyers and us focusing on that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sure, yeah. So there's a pragmatic level and a value-based level to us focusing on institutions. One is the amount of energy it goes into setting up a new account and forming a meaningful relationship. Isn't that much different from an independent grocer to, school or a hospital? And there's certain level of logistical considerations, I don't know, and insurance umbrellas and things like that, but all that doesn't make too big of a difference at the end of the year. And so I realized, like, right, oh man, I really want to use my time as well as possible. I need to probably have some of these more creative conversations, but I also wasn't in a position to really have those conversations until a couple of years and until we kind of perfected our processes through that slow, steady growth of adding different food co-ops and restaurants one by one for a while there. Now we're at a point where, you know, we have this great kitchen that we can use, the Mad River Food Hub in Wakefield. That's been ginormous for us. I think the food hub model is something that's going to play a bigger and bigger role in the local agricultural economy moving forward. And so with the added capacity for both storage and processing that the food hub offers us, made all the sense in the world for necessary to institutions. And the institutions, I mean, we're really fortunate. If we were trying to do this 10 years ago, it would be a much more uphill battle. But they were, they're eager for opportunities to start institutions. They're offering their nutrition already with better tasting, more nutritious, more soulful, more local, more organic, whenever possible. And so we're in a fortunate position where it's maybe the first time in who knows how long where we look at a company like us as a toolkit or a box of solutions. And so we, instead of just approaching them and be like, hey, we make all this stuff, you should buy it, and you're a bad person if you don't, kind of approach them like, so these are some things that we do, but it's not the limit of what we can do. What are you feeling like you need the most? And trying to structure it like that, and through conversations like that, I realized, like, cool, we got some people that are buying burgers, some people like to buy like a rejiggered hummus or a falafel or something like that, but also people just want beans, whether they're dry or just like cooked beans, and so we cut this product now, really, I don't know if you can even call it a product, but this concept that I wouldn't have necessarily thought of myself of. I was talking to Fletcher Allen Hopkins at the biggest hospital in Vermont, and they wanted just cooked off beans, you know, and to get off of a number time can. So we found a BPA-free bucket. We don't have any sodium. We don't have any preservatives. We call the canned beans out, and it's local organic dried beans. And because we don't have, you know, a crazy amount of labor in it, we're just putting off beans, and, you know, they're able to more readily integrate local beans into their offerings, and they serve a lot of them. You know, it's could be, actually just met with them earlier today, too, to talk about this more. You know, a few different varieties of beans and ultimately thousands of pounds of dried beans that they're going to be able to integrate into their offerings that they wouldn't have earlier because they're not set up necessarily to cook with dry beans. They do cook with some dry beans, but there are certain menu offerings or certain subset kitchens, most satellite kitchens that aren't in a position to do that. So by having an open conversation and not just trying to play the role of a salesperson and make it more about relationship building, we were able to just in a very easy way, in a way that really works for us and with our production, so we're having that to wrestle in a few times more dry beans into swan account that otherwise we might not be able to use them. And that model, once we figure out what works for one place, it's going to work for other places. So that same conversation is now being had at colleges and things like this. And at one point we considered, like, oh, right, limiting pans. No one's using dry beans. Everyone's using pans. Should we just start canning? Should we start a cannery? Like, who's making candy and stuff like that? How do we do that? And then I researched it. It's just incredibly energy intensive, incredibly expensive, really dangerous, and consequential from a food safety standpoint, a liability standpoint. And it's just like, it's just too complicated. Let's just put beans and put them up into scrub fresh. You know, you still got to drop the temperatures fast and all, but it's real easy to do that. trying to always default towards collaboration and also the simplest possible means of getting people to eat the stuff that starts eating has this problem of just aggregating into a viable business somehow.
So we haven't got much time left, and I want to make sure that you don't forget to remind all of our listeners who are waiting on their hands and just panting with excitement to get out of New York City where they're listening to this podcast and up to Vermont to attend your upcoming fiesta. So let us have it in not very many too longs.
Okay. Yeah, so May 27th, Memorial Day weekend at Mill Farm in Lakeshore, Vermont, we're putting on an heirloom bean and wine pairing. On a great grape and bean pairing. It's going to be live music, four different heirloom bean pairings, so four different wines, some local, some from within your neighborhood in Italy, and I think it's the first time this sort of thing ever happened, and our mutual good friend Ripley is going to be making some art. There'll be some epic silent auction stuff that include art and local food offerings. And hopefully it'll be an annual event, and hopefully you guys can get part of the inaugural version of this event. Oh, and
I'm coming. I'm so excited.
And also, if you basically are going to funnel directly into the equipment that we need to bring the staple food economy in Vermont to the next level. That's kind of the idea. So, again, going for that base model, it's giving like community an opportunity to vote with their feet and their dollars and their taste buds for stuff that's worth having in the agricultural system.
And one last plug also for the solstice party at the Keysville Grange. Keysville Grange, that's one of the six granges of the Adirondacks. It's actually the most beautiful one. It's built out of granite stone on the hill above the O'Sable River, right across from a factory that makes horse nails, or used to make horse nails, where Eric Andrews of the Vermont Sale Project will be making a presentation there about the Vermont Sale Project, which those of our loyal listeners, we had a lot of good feedback about his interview. And hopefully Joe will be there. Ripley will definitely be there. Okay, lots of things. Check it out. I just posted the invitation to the blog today. So thank you all for a great radio, and I'll see you next weekend, Joe.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it, Simon. Thanks, everyone, and have a beautiful day.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.